Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. And today I'm delighted to welcome Cheryl. Hello. Welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me.
Delighted that you're joining us here today. I was listening to some of my starts of some of my earlier podcasts, and I'm thinking, at the start of these podcasts, I've been in a little bit of a rush. I haven't said hello. I've just kind of got straight into it. So I thought, yeah, I'm going to learn from that. And just take it a little bit slower because I've been, yeah, I don't know, there's some sort of impatience to get into this stuff. But welcome to the show. So for the listeners, Cheryl and I have had a chat before this and a chat before we kind of agreed to. She agreed to come on to the podcast, but I'd love for you if you could you introduce yourself, Cheryl, and then we'll get into that.
Yeah. So my name's Cheryl Prue, and I live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I am the executive director of a licensed not-for-profit registered charity adoption agency called Adoption Options, and I've been the director since 2008, but my personal story of adoption and which ultimately led to my career as a social worker began when I was 16 years old and I faced an unintended pregnancy and ultimately chose adoption. So yeah, long connection now with adoption.
Yeah. And you're the first birth mom, is that?
Yeah. That's the right term. Yeah.
That's the right term. You're the first birth mom that we've had on the show. And
okay.
And the show is all about those different perspectives and a conversation, because I think that when we hear different perspectives, it's perspective that changes us in my opinion. When we see something new for ourselves, when we have a new idea, when we have an insight, when we have, you know, a big insight or a little insight, like an epiphany or even epiphanette, which is a little epiphany. So the show is all around the different perspectives, and hopefully perspectives that can help us all grow. Because as we were saying before we started recording, my biggest changes come when I realized that what I thought was true was absolute rubbish. You know, when the beliefs in my head are quashed, they're gone. Whether that's something around adoption or about anything else in life, it's perspective that changes us. So I wanted to bring in. So that's why I'm so delighted to have a birth mom's perspective on this, because I think it's vital, and I know some of your story, so I know how great it's going to be to share with the rest of the listeners.
Well, thank you, and just to follow up on that, I value storytelling. I think it's essential to everyone's understanding and personal growth and learning. But I also respect that every individual has their own story and their own experiences that guides them and hopefully inspires them to do better and be better. And certainly that's what my journey has been. It's hard looking back on my teenager self and how honestly dark initially learning that I was pregnant was, and feeling completely, completely alone. And like there was no end in sight, you know, you just sort of feel like you're in this dark, dark hole and everything is overwhelming. And then here I am today. The director of the adoption agency, and hopefully doing really good work. So that's the goal. So it's amazing how our experiences and journeys, where they can take you and what happens. Yeah. So
who would have thought? Yeah.
I didn't. So who would have
thought? Yeah. We were talking about this before. There's some darkness. I had a bit of a, there was a little bit of a social media glitch I had an hour or so ago, and there's a lot of darkness in this space of adoption. And when we're in the darkness, we can't see clearly. I couldn't see clearly when I was in the darkness of my stuff. So the purpose of the show really is to bring a little bit of light and hope, and so that we can see the story, you know, the story from darkness to light. And
love that.
The inspirational piece through the story. And also for me, it's the empowerment piece. It's the, what was it that we learned on the story? So I'm keen to bring in both and focus on the learnings so we do the story and then we get into learnings. But just before we start on that, so I understand where you're coming from and give a context for the rest of the interview. When I say the word thriving adoptees to you, or the words thriving adoptees to you, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it means that somebody who is doing well is content and happy within themselves, and is comfortable and content with who they are and what their personal story is. To me, that's a thriving individual.
Cool. Can I ask you a follow-up on that one that you said about the personal story? What do you mean by that?
Pardon me?
What do you mean by that? So you said, I think you said something like content with their personal story or something.
Content with their personal story. So whatever your history is, you know, your story of adoption, whatever that was, in terms of how you landed in the family you ultimately were raised in, whatever that story is, that you have found peace within yourself with it. So you're able to honor that journey, whether it was a very traumatic one or one of understanding and love, whatever that story was in terms of how you became an adoptee, that you found peace with it and are content in life.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I love the word peace. You said it a couple of times and that was, so the counterpoint that I got to that was my own anger, the kind of the rage that came on down on me when I was 40 about being adopted, and also the anger that was driving the social media stuff that I was talking about that happened an hour ago. So yeah, I guess this is all about from darkness to darkness and to light, and from anger to peace, really.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And grief is that, you know, everyone in I call it the circle of adoption has loss. We enter this in with all loss, whether you're an adoptee, birth family member, an adoptive parent, absolutely everybody in that circle comes with loss. And reconciling that, honoring that, and moving through that in a healthy manner. And anger is one of those stages. And coming to a place of acceptance, whatever that is for yourself, is essential to our overall health and well-being and happiness. And again, contentment. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you talking about that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross curve with that?
Yeah, I mean, the stages of grief, certainly. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's different phases that everybody travels through to reconcile that.
Yeah. It's interesting that I've had a look at those phases, not recently, actually, but I had a look at those phases. They can be, my own experience of that, it is obviously everybody's experience is going to be different. My own experience of that is that some of the stages that I went through at lightning speed, like in seconds,
right?
You know, whereas I see, and some stages I got some areas I think I've been stuck in, but I see a lot of people stuck.
Yeah.
And in the phases. I've also one of my favorite takes, and it's similar to the Kubler-Ross curve, but it's broader. Did I mention to you this the scale of consciousness? This guy called Dr. David Hawkins created. Have I?
No.
So he's got a scale of human consciousness, which is like it's a logarithmic scale. So it doesn't. It's very, very steep, essentially. Right? And it goes from 0 to 1,000. And anything below 200 is kind of detractive, a negative force to life. And anything above it is affirmative. So shame, there's a lot of shame in adoption. That scores at 20. That's 20. And then I think anger, I can't remember, is 50 or 150. Pride, kind of indignant pride, is about 180. Unconditional love is about 350 or 500, but it's an incredible way to look at it. The book is called Power Versus Force. I'll put a link in the show notes, but if anybody's interested, Power Versus Force, and that really doesn't mean anything, doesn't it? But power is above 200. It's when we're in our zone, when we are moving towards something, when we and force is below 200 is when we're trying to make something happen, and we're in a low state. So it's an incredible piece of work. Zero is dead. So you think about people's shame being so long, being in shame so long in that 20 zone, and then them thinking that the world, it's heartbreaking, thinking that the world would be a better place without them. And at the other end of the scale, 1,000 is all the great religious avatars across the different religions, from Christianity to Buddhism, and score at 1,000. And it looks at this scale, the subtitle is The Hidden Determinants of Human Behavior. So our consciousness is going up and down all day, every day. And when we have an insight, it's like a leap in that consciousness. It's a jump up the curve. I just find it stunning, because it describes why, you know, I'm 54. I was adopted 54 years ago. So we've got a historical fact. And historically, my mood has gone up and down a lot. My consciousness, you know, my mood and my feelings and stuff have gone up and down a lot, despite the fixed event. So what's happened is I've been going up and down this level of consciousness. So none of us are tethered to anything that has happened in the past, because all our experiences change. Our experience changes day to day, minute to minute, second to second, according to this consciousness stuff, not something that happened 54 years ago. So,
awesome. That's fascinating. I'll definitely look into that.
Yeah, it's incredible work. Some of it is quite hard to get your head around. Well, for me, definitely. So can you share a little bit of more about your story?
Yeah, of course. So grew up in a very somewhat traditional family, mom, dad, and I have an older sister. And I literally fell in love with the boy across the street, and came to find out that I was pregnant, and went into a complete state of denial, which is also fascinating about human nature. But I completely went into a state of denial as a very tiny girl, and very active with dancing and very loving, close family. But I just ignored what was going on for me because I just couldn't face the reality of what that might mean. And then I became quite tired, and I was concealing my body changing. It was like July and I'm wearing heavy sweaters. And so my mom said, something's going on here. I think that we need to go to the doctor. And so I nervously agreed to do that. And our family doctor was away on holidays. So I saw somebody who was covering for her. And he was an older gentleman. And he told me that I had mono and told my mom she needs lots of rest. And that was it. And I was probably 5 months pregnant at that time. So that just really helped me go into a state of denial. Like, maybe I'm not pregnant. Maybe I'm sick. You know, now in reflection, I think he just did not want to deal with this. Wow. And so anyways, my mom recognized that something was not right and insisted we go see our actual doctor. Probably it was close to 2 months after that. I was about 7 months along by this point and went and saw our doctor, and I'd known her since I was really little. And she just said to me, "Cheryl, you know, you're pregnant." And I just burst into tears. And she asked if, and both my parents came to that appointment. So they obviously knew as well. So they were waiting in the waiting room. And my doctor said, "Do you want me to tell them?" And I, without words, just lots of tears, nodded my head. And wow. Her office was right next to the examination room. And so I could hear her call them in. And I mean, that was one of the hardest moments of my life for sure, because I could hear my mom just cry and I couldn't hear my dad at all, which I knew meant he was crying. And in all those years, I think I'd only seen my dad cry once before. And so the shame, I mean, you talked about that earlier, the shame and guilt and fear I had that I felt I was inflicted. And you just feel completely like you're drowning. Anyways, my incredible parents, they did come in to see me and they just threw their arms around me and said, "We're going to get through this." Yeah. And I mean, that was incredible. I'm very, very grateful because I absolutely know that's not often what happens. So we went home and we sort of processed everything and had a family meeting, which included my sister, and they reinforced that they love me. Their first concern is my well-being and that we have options. You know, my family was in a position where they could support me in parenting. But at the same time, allowed me to really consider my options. So I essentially grabbed the yellow pages, which today would be Google, I guess, and looked up adoption. I knew nothing about adoption, but I needed to just understand what my options were. And ultimately what I wanted was for my baby to have what I had. Really loving, stable family unit. And I was still completely dependent on my parents and not able to take care of myself. So I knew I had a lot of love to give and that I had a family to support me. But I also had dreams to go to university and to one day get married and have a family. So, and I wanted this child to have stability that I valued and had the experience of. So I looked up adoption and phoned to make an appointment. And to be honest, I thought, oh, they're only going to want my baby. I was very reluctant but I wanted the information at the same time. So I probably approached it from a defense way because I didn't know. And I was met with, the first agency I called couldn't see me right away. And I wanted to see somebody right away. I felt the urgency of everything in that moment. And I wanted to understand things. The second agency that I called, that person, who becomes very important in my life, just her, she's such a calming voice. She just said, it sounds like you would like to talk to somebody pretty quick. I said, yes. And she said, I'm going to clear my schedule and you and your mom, because I asked if my mom and I could come talk with her. You and your mom come down this afternoon. And she did. So my mom and I went and met with, her name is Linda, and a social worker at Adoption Options.
Yeah.
And again, my mom also went in on the defense, you know, to be protective of me and her first grandchild. And nobody's going to take my baby or influence my daughter's decision. My mom's a force. and this social worker, this woman, she presented all options. She said, yeah, this is what parenting could be. And this is what we do here in terms of adoption. And this is what it looks like. And this is your decision. This is yours and your family's decision. So I'm here to support you and provide you with resources and counseling. But this is your decision and only one that you can make. So I started going for regular counseling, and I did ultimately decide to move forward with making an adoption plan, which meant that I started looking at profiles of vetted, approved, waiting adoptive parents. And I brought those profiles home, and I put them in order of who I was really drawn to. And I was instantly drawn to Jill and Al. And I put their file aside almost immediately. And then I asked my parents and my sister and the birth father to also look at the files and put them in order. And we all chose. And then we had a family meeting. I called the family meeting and then did the reveal. Who do you guys like? And we all liked Jill and Al. And to me, I firmly believe, and it's only been reinforced after all these years, that it was meant to be. And not that that was it sounds like it was a really smooth, easy process. Again, I went for weekly counseling, and there was a lot of tears, a lot of upset. I started talking to my baby by that point almost every day and connecting with him and just wanting him to know how much he was loved. And see, I get emotional.
Yeah.
It was a hard time.
Yeah,
that was a hard time. And for my family as well, they also were recognizing the gratitude of this. This was my parents' first grandchild. I am their baby, having a baby. And we're making a huge decision, trusting that these people we choose are going to love this being that we love and provide this life that I ultimately hoped for him. So,
yeah.
So that was that. You can choose to have what's called a match meeting. I did not at that time with Jill and Al. Instead, it wasn't until the hospital that I met them. So I gave birth to my son, Kyler, and then had Jill and Al come up to the hospital. And back then, 30 years ago, I spent about 5 days in the hospital, and I was faced with a lot of judgment. So nurses, the hospital social worker in particular, really talked down to me, did not want me to hold or see my baby. I'd had an epidural, so I was frozen from the chest down, and they Kyler was in the nursery, which was quite a ways down from where they had put me to have a rest. And when I came to, I still couldn't move my legs. So I buzzed the nurse to say, I'd like to see my son. And they just said, no, no, he's sleeping. So they wouldn't bring him to me. So I essentially, there was a like a rail on the wall, and I essentially used my fingers and dragged myself down the hall to see my baby. And then they put me in a closet to hold him and see him, because it was a shameful thing. So it just perpetuated that cloak of shame that I already felt. I had already isolated myself from my friends and really didn't tell anybody. It was only my family at that time that knew I was going through this. And the birth father and his family by that point had moved to another city. And he was very supportive of me and this decision. But yeah, we really did keep it a secret from everybody. I was not going to school. Kyler was born in September. We had just let the school know that I had mono, which I apparently also did, but, and yeah, so Jill and Al came up to the hospital, and, my dad and my sister and the birth father were there, and I placed Kyler in his new mom's arms, Jill's arms, so incredibly emotional. My mom actually needed to leave the room because she was really struggling with all of it at that time.
Wow.
Yeah, it was honestly the most beautiful and most difficult thing ever. And for them as well, you know, for Jill and Al as well. I can only imagine the emotions and the gratitude and gravity of all of it. So we decided that I would reach out to them when I was ready to hear how they were doing. And I can't remember how long after, it wasn't that long after, we invited them over to my parents' home for a visit. And I mean, the physical grief and loss, I describe it as when I went home from the hospital, like this huge empty hole in my whole being. I felt it, I ached it, I longed for him. I could hear him crying every night in my head. That grief and loss is significant. Yeah. And knowing that he was in this loving family was what kept me going, and the support of incredible parents and my social worker at Adoption Options, who I was also meeting with regularly. So those factors really helped with me getting through things. And then when they came over for the first visit, well, I paced all morning waiting for them, but I saw them walking up the path, and Jill, Al, they had another son, Trevor, who they also adopted, and they're holding Kyler. And I said to my mom, before they got to the door, I said, "Mom, look at that beautiful family." And that just brought me such comfort and peace. And I think that, you know, I'm in an exceptional position being a birth mother who got to make a decision in an open adoption where I chose the family. I knew who they were. And I got to see them afterwards and know how they're doing, how Kyler's doing. I'm so grateful for that, because I have worked with, and I know many women who didn't have that. And to not have that peace of mind and well-being would have been really, really difficult.
Yeah.
In an already difficult situation. So, wow. So all these years later, I mean, we nurtured a relationship, and I think why it has worked is because I've always respected and valued Jill as the mom, Al as the dad, and it's a privilege for me and my family to be connected to this family. And essentially, we nurtured a very special extended family type relationship over many years, but we've always respected each other's roles. You know, there's no question Kyler knows who his mom and dad are. But he also knows I'm his birth mom, and that's really special and cool too. And we look a lot alike, so I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah.
So just honoring all of those things, I know is what supported all of us in, Kyler growing into the exceptional young man he is today.
Yeah. Wow. So much.
I know. So much. I really summarized a lot there.
There's so much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll just say as a birth mom, because I know you shared that I'm the first birth mom. Again, this is just my story and journey, but that cloak of shame is really heavy. And it was, I would love to say all these years later that women facing unintended pregnancies don't face that shame, judgment. How could you give away your baby? But we still do. Women still do. And that is heavy. You cannot judge somebody's decision without being in their shoes and understanding. And I know firsthand that you cannot choose to make an adoption plan without love of that child, because it is very painful. It's completely about wanting the best life possible for that child. Because I could have been a parent, but I wanted him to have stability. And I also wanted for myself to be stable and healthy and to achieve some personal goals as well. So I did face a lot of judgment. And even when I did eventually tell my peers and start talking, there's a lot of judgment out there. And that's ultimately what led me into my career as a social worker, because the hospital social worker, when I gave birth, was incredibly judgmental. And I thought, wow, so many other women in my position would not be able to push back. I essentially asked her to leave my room, but I wondered afterwards how many women weren't able to do that and took on the shame and guilt that she was trying to place on me and push them into a decision that they didn't actually want to make, because they felt that they had to. So I wanted to be a social worker to support anyone facing unplanned pregnancy, but also any woman who was facing fertility loss and considering their options. Because as I got to know Jill and many, many other women who faced fertility loss, and actually I ended up as well going through that path and that journey, there's also a lot of misunderstanding out there associated with that. And so how can we make this a more caring process for women and families in general, and hopefully ultimately the adoptees' experience in the end?
Well, I don't know where to go with a big question with all those themes and unpacking it and giving you, not trying to, because I hear some interviewers trying to break stuff down, to break stuff down into processes and rationalizations. And I think sometimes you need to do that. But sometimes when we're talking about such a big things, a big subject as this, and so far wide ranging, it doesn't, for me as an interviewer, it doesn't feel right in the moment. So, we've got adoptive parents listening to the show. We've got adoptees listening to the show. Whether there's any birth mums, I'm not so sure. I don't know, maybe. What would you like to, the end goal is for everybody in the adoption triad to thrive. The name of this show is Thriving Adoptees, but the thriving of the adoptees clearly in a situation like yours, when you're still in touch with Kyle, it's to do with how you are, and it's to do with how his parents are, his adopted parents are.
Yeah.
So what would you like to share from that intention for everybody involved in the triad?
You know, I really believe, and don't get me wrong, there's challenges. Like everybody faces other life challenges that go on and can impede in relationships, and always nurturing and honoring different relationships. But I believe for my family that, you know, we've been able to have a good relationship all these years later, again, because Jill and Al were always very respectful and welcoming of myself and my family. And they were also very, very secure in who they were and that they were the parents. So I think that's key. So there was never any issues with that. They knew their mom and dad. And I absolutely tried to always honor and respect that. And I feel that I always did. And always stay focused on the love of the child. You know, like, they're the parents. I respect that. They make the decisions. And I, at the same time, they were so great at, you know, Jill could call me and share every story about Kyler, and I would just eat it up. Like, you can't get enough. Your friends don't want to hear that, how wonderful your kid is. But I did. So we were able to build a wonderful relationship on the love of this little boy, right? And how exceptional he is. Everything he did. No. I think we just really honored each other. And so with that, in my opinion, they are such great parents because they're two boys, because they also have a wonderful relationship with their other son's birth family. They grew up where this was just normal. And I remember one story where Kyler had a good friend. Actually, they're still good friends. And they had a visitor over to their house, and she happened to have long, dark hair. And I have long, dark hair. And Kyler's brother, Trevor, his birth mom also has long dark hair. So that he saw his friend who lived across the street and this woman with long dark hair visiting. And he said, "Oh, that must be Tristan's birth mom." And Jill and I just laughed because we realized, he was little, like quite little, probably five or something, little. And so Jill and I just realized in the moment how normal this was for these kids, right? And not everybody has a birth mom and a mom, so maybe we need to explain that more, but it was just normal. And I think that's what Kyler would say today, and his brother, is just, this was just always normal, and sometimes they had to explain it. And if we were all out together, I could always see that people who knew Kyler and his family but hadn't really met me would look at Kyler, look at me, knowing he's adopted, and wondering, and we really look like each other, especially at certain stages. And, you know, we would just kind of laugh. And so it was just always so normal. But I think that is credit to his parents, first and foremost, for being really grounded in their roles as mom and dad, and very comfortable, welcoming their children's birth family and honoring that relationship. So I think it's respect, nurturing, understanding, and that just grew into a really nice relationship. I think that's the key. Not everybody is capable of doing that for different reasons. You know, again, we're all healthy. And I also did a lot of healing work. So I guess I would highlight that too, is I did go for counseling. I did a lot of loss and grief work. And there were times when it was really hard for me to see Kyler. Like, I remember I had been invited to a soccer game and I called Jill last minute, and I still regret this, and said I was sick, but I was just having a really bad emotional day. And I didn't know if Kyler even would care that I wasn't there. And I'm grateful to Jill because she called me the next day to see how I was. But she said, you know, Kyler was disappointed you didn't come. And that's when I realized, and my mom kind of gave me the once over too for it. Like, you follow through with your commitments. So I, from that day on, realized, okay, if I'm going to commit to something, then I honor that.
Yeah.
And so there is healing that has to be done though, and understanding there. And I started telling my story, and that was very healing. So for Adoption Options, I was asked to be a speaker at a couple of adoption events, and I started sharing my story, and that was very healing, very, very healing. And again, you get a lots of different opinions from people, some very negative judging, and others though with a lot of love, and to say, wow, I'm not alone. And that too was healing for me, because when I was 16, I felt very alone. I felt like I was the only girl who had ever experienced an unintended pregnancy, was having sex at such a young age, and the shame that you carry. So to find out that you're not alone, and to share your story and to surround yourself. I started going to a support group with other women, birth mothers, and we started, you know, going out on just social events every once in a while. And that too was grounding, because nobody can understand exactly what you're going through unless you've had a similar experience. So all of those things, with the support of my family, also helped.
And shifting the focus, well, maybe I should do a bridge. So how has that informed your work leading the agency that 30 years ago helped Kyla meet Jill? And sorry, Jill's husband's called, what's Jill's?
Al, yeah.
Yeah. So how is that, how is what you've learned, how does that inform what you do now and how you do what you do with Adoption Options?
Yeah. So again, I decided I wanted to be a social worker like the one I met at Adoption Options, Linda, because I didn't experience support in any other area. And I came to learn that other girls at the time at my high school also had experienced unintended pregnancies and also did not talk about it, kept it a secret. And I thought, this is just so not right. We need to support each other. And just take care of each other. So yes, I went into social work. After I got my degree in social work, I worked in children's services for a few years, which was amazing learning. Very, very difficult work, but amazing growth and learning for myself in terms of understanding policies, but also the complexities of family dynamics, relationships, et cetera. And then when Linda was getting ready to retire from Adoption Options, and I had stayed in contact with her, I had done volunteer work for Adoption Options since I was 16. I did my practicum for social work at Adoption Options. So I'd stayed connected and invested. And so she asked me to come on over as a frontline social worker, which I was thrilled to do. So that was in 2003. And then eventually I became the director. So my intention and hope every day with whoever calls, messages, walks through the door of the agency is that I'm just there with information, an open heart, and connections to other resources, if that's a fit, given the individual sitting across from me, what they're currently going through, what their hopes are, and for me to just really walk them through that, you know, what is going on for them, what do they ultimately want, and how can I support them best in that journey? And ultimately, if they choose adoption, that we ensure we're doing it in a respectful, ethical, professional way always, and working with the individuals. Because historically, adoption was done to people. And I'm so grateful for those who had the experiences, the hard experiences prior to my generation, because that's what led to open adoption practice and the agency that I now am the director of. I mean, we recognize, the people before me, that we were doing adoption to people, and adoption needed to be done with people with good intentions and support and love. And that's what I'm so grateful for, is that I was able to choose the adoptive family, to know where my son was going, to know how he's doing. And for the adoptive parents, I believe they would say, I want to know where my child came from, where they get their quirks from, and to be able to share with him or her the love and the heritage of their birth family. So there are no questions. We can hopefully eliminate the cloak of shame for anybody in this adoption circle. And find support and love of the child and put that at the forefront.
So what have you learned about what helps adoptees thrive from your professional role? And is all you've shared, is it all mixed in together, or are there certain things that you've learned? Certain, you know, like, is it a theme? I mean, to me, it's a respect. It's respect, honoring, you know, person-centered, mm-hmm. empowering, all these great things, which I'm totally bought into. Are there certain things? Other things that you've learned? I'm just thinking about, as I said at the start, I want to do the inspire, inspiration piece, but I want to do the empowerment as well. So it's like, what could you share about what helps adoptees thrive to the people that are listening?
My hope for adoptees is that they have their information, and that it's presented to them, even if it's difficult history information, that it's presented to them from a very young age, with love, sensitivity, and respect, and that every adoptee knows that only the best life possible is wanted for them. Again, no matter what the start of their life was, because I do appreciate that, again, everybody has different stories, and some are can be very complex and traumatic. However, I firmly believe that, the best life possible is wanted for them when a birth mother chooses to make an adoption plan. And so they know they are loved. And by their adoptive parents, they have had also a long, challenging road, whatever that journey has been, to achieve parenthood. And so they too have been completely vulnerable and experienced often multiple losses to get to the point of welcoming this baby and child and loving unconditionally. I mean, it's amazing. So yeah, my hope for every adoptee is that their history is respected, no matter what it is, given to them with that honor, respect, nurturing, and they have a connectedness to their roots and an honoring of their current family unit. And that is just celebrated.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. wow. What can I say? I think that's probably a great point to bring this into a close. Thank you very much, Cheryl.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. and thank you for what you're doing, because it's really important and the stories are powerful. So thanks for having me, Simon.
Thank you very much. See you all again. Okay. Thanks a lot.